Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. The Let's Get Busy podcast is produced in part by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com. Welcome to Let's Get Busy, a weekly podcast where I talk shop and get down to business with authors, illustrators, award winners, up-and-comers, and everyone in between. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 222 of the podcast with Kristen Kitcher, author of The Tiara on the Terrace, the sequel to The Wig in the Window. Talking with Kristen was awesome, and her new book is outstanding. It's a fast-paced read, the characters are well-developed, and the setting is rooted firmly in the real world, making it all the more fun to be along for the ride. But there's something that Kristen says at one point in our chat that I haven't been able to stop thinking about, and that's this, quote, "Nothing that anyone writes is devoid of self." Getting to know the writer behind Tiara on the Terrace was such an insightful and engaging experience, and it makes all the sense in the world to me now that Kristen writes the books she does. I hope you walk away with a similar perspective. Oh, and be sure to visit the episode show notes at allthewonders.com to see Kristen's amazing book trailer for the Tiara on the Terrace. Until then, here's episode number 222 of the podcast with Kristen Kitcher. Let's get busy. Welcome to the Let's Get Busy podcast, Kristen Kitcher. I am so thankful that I get to talk to you tonight.
I'm even more thankful. This is wonderful to be here. Thanks again.
Kristen, you're a wonderful human being. I'm just going to say that having talked only to you for 26 minutes so far off record, I just know that you're wonderful and I appreciate that. And we were talking about social media and I said this to you off record, but to say it again, I know you're wonderful too, because a lot of people think you're wonderful online. And when that kind of stuff comes back, it's really cool. And our friend Beth, our mutual friend Beth, talks about you all the time. And I'm thankful to know that people like you are behind these great books that are in the hands of kids. That to me is always a really great thing.
Oh, that's so sweet. That's so sweet. As you first started saying, I was like, I should reveal some deep, dark secrets that will make me much less likable. these are far too many compliments, but thank you.
I am the reason they tell children to check their candy at Halloween. Mwahaha! No.
Well, there is a mischievous element to me.
Well, there's a lot of really great things going on in your writing life, and I'm excited that our timing for this podcast is that you've got The Tiara on the Terrace coming out, your follow-up to Wig in the Window, and that's awesome. Way to go. Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very, very proud of this book.
Yay. Do you mind sharing, have you practiced your book talk for it yet, your elevator pitch for it yet?
Gosh, you know, this is my very first interview for this book. I'm just realizing that. But I have talked about it. I have talked about it plenty with friends.
But I mean, you and I were talking also before recording about how you're gearing up. Once the launch happens, there's a ton of stuff that goes on.
I know. So this is a good warm up. We've got the parade. Actually, it's really fun. So the Tiara on the Terrace is a Yang and Yang, the main characters from The Wig in the Window, are two intrepid sleuths who in this book go undercover, sort of Miss Congeniality style in the Rose Parade. There's a royal court in the Rose Parade. Of course, I'm calling this the Winter Sun Festival, and it's a fictionalized version. But they go undercover because they believe they need to solve a deadly crime. The festival president, the Winter Sun Festival president, has turned up dead in a parade float. The Girl Scouts Berry Happy Family parade float. He was killed very tragically by a giant dancing animatronic s'more on the Girl Scout float. And everyone believes this is an accident. Tragic it was, but Young and Yang and their friend Trista Bottoms know better. And there are a number of suspects that they need to track down. So they audition to go into the royal court and are kind of servants to the queen and princesses right. of this sort of thinly veiled beauty pageant, which is based on the Pasadena Rose Court.
It's, I have to giggle. It's not like, I know how serious the content is.
I know, it was a little difficult. Yeah.
But I mean, come on. It's so good. You've got, you know, you were mentioning this to me before, when I just got the book in my hands. I'm a busy guy, which is great. And I've said this on record before, and I probably should stop saying this on record over and over because it makes me seem like a horrible librarian. But it's really, I'm a slow reader. It's really, really hard for me to go through middle grade. It just, is it right?
And this is a longer one. This is a meatier one.
But your book flies. It flies by. It's such, I mean, no wonder. I mean, it gave me such an insight to also why kids or how kids are able to fly through books the way that they are. I mean, that true notion of that feeling of like a page turner. This is a book that does that. I don't know. I don't even know how to ask you, like, so how do you do that, Kristen? but the
I
fact that
be
you
able
do
to
it.
No. But I'm so glad. You know, I just remember as a kid, I liked just being fully, fully immersed in a different world for a long time. It was a total escape.
Nice.
And, so while I wouldn't classify my books as escapist, that is one of the goals I'm having is creating this fun world. And I think, you know, I was teaching seventh grade a long time and watching sort of even over the years as technology, as things just sort of seem to keep speeding up,
mm-hmm.
that a lot of my seventh graders were starting to appear like little business people, you know, with their rolling backpacks and lots of binders and so much stuff and so many schedules and like checking their calendars to have play dates and whatnot. And, you know, I'm perhaps dating myself, but it wasn't like that when I was younger, and we just had a lot more freedom to run around. So when I'm writing, I'm also trying to like create a surreal world that goes back to that kind of feeling. So it's nice to feel that, I'm glad to hear that it feels immersive and flying by and that you can soak it up, because I want to give them adventures.
Well, I think I guess we're all now, even as adults, we're products of the world that we've created, but these kids have grown up in this world. They haven't known anything any different. But I find myself, particularly in your book, and it's happened with a couple others, which I'm really grateful that there are those books that can pull you out that way. I found, you know, for me now as an adult, a testament of a good book is one that can steal my time away and steal my attention, maybe is the word, away. And that's really great. And to start off as you do, building a parade float and having a near death within the first 5 pages or something, 2 pages.
It's early. It's early. You know, I'm surprised they let me get away with a murder mystery, but I think the silliness aspect or the absurdity does help. Yeah. Provide some distance from the actual reality. Yeah.
I think you have a great story, and I think that you have a good handle on writing that action and that pace. So what is your, when you're laying out a book, Kristen, mm-hmm. let me actually try to dissect this without trying to dissect this, because I don't want to do that. But
well, I'm
but,
curious too. I'm like, yes, let's look at this. How does this happen?
Let's go ahead to lay down on the couch and we can break down the therapy of writing. The therapy of writing.
Don't make me cry. That's all. This is not Barbara Walters, right?
Tell me about the near-death experiences you've had with your mother. No. Okay. But so your writing style is, I don't want to say it's fast-paced, because nothing feels rushed. It feels just that it moves. There isn't.
Yeah, there's a fair amount of reflection, and you know, in it as well, because I'm writing from a first-person
right
point of view, and I actually, when I wrote The Wig in the Window, I was writing something for my seventh graders. I wanted to write something that I thought was sophisticated enough for them, but nonetheless wholesome, you know, and they weren't going to, you know, it would be complex enough for them that they were not bored by it, I guess, at that older age group. And yet they're not reading about like the juicy romances of YA books, you know, that they were hungry for. So I was really inspired by Kiki Strike books by Kirsten Miller. They're now quite old, but maybe 10 years old, but or at least the first one, really, really fun mysteries that really didn't condescend to the readers. And I thought they were just perfect. So I was inspired to do that, but I had no idea what I was doing. I just had been a reader, and I'd wanted to write, but I was just more, I never actually did. So I started really late, and that was the first thing I wrote. So it was this big meandering process. Like, I didn't even know I was writing a mystery exactly. I was just writing about these adventures and had to keep throwing things away. And I don't even know how that ended up, you know. I got a lot of help is what ended up happening, from friends, from a freelance editor who helped me so much. Her name's Carol LaRoe, who was Kate DiCamillo, who discovered Kate DiCamillo in the Slush Pile, actually. And then, so for the second book, and the reason I mentioned the first person point of view is I would have never done that if I understood mystery writing at all, because it makes it very hard to write a mystery.
That's right.
First person point of view, because you only have access to that one character's thoughts. You can't jump and show anything else. And then when you're in the first person point of view, the thoughts and reflections and feelings are really important too. So that can slow things down. That slows action down. So, you know, the mystery ends up longer because it's not just boom, 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 the case. It is the interaction and thoughts of the friendships of the girls in this mansion undercover. So, you know, I don't know that everyone would agree with you that I'm fast-paced. Some people are like, this is slow. But they would if they realize, hey, all of the clues are still wrapped up in that reflection. So it is really, I would say, I'm sure everyone is like, it's so hard to write. But this was actually more difficult to write than The Wig in the Window because of trying to keep the pace of this big world, describing this big world from a 12-year-old's point of view, and then also dealing with the friendship kind of logical consequences of that. So when I sat down to write the second one, I was determined to not make all the mistakes that I did with The Wig in the Window of just meandering and not knowing where I was going. And then so I outlined it with it to within an inch of its life. And then I would freeze, you know, at all different times because I was like, well, I was trying to make things fit the outline and not following the characters. So I learned from this book that in a way my Wig in the Window, something a little bit more in between was what ended up working out much better. Once I let go of that outline, I had a lot more fun and it felt much more genuine.
But it was that's what I'm getting at. When you're saying about making this detailed outline and then letting it go.
Yeah.
Like knowing the story well enough that then you can trust yourself to retell it and know I'm not going to miss anything, but by retelling it, I'm going to be able to embellish it and make it more of a enjoyable story to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think it's funny how much writing is like a life metaphor too. I feel like through both the process of writing and also talking to you, you know, marketing a book, all these things is like the process of learning how to care very, very, very deeply and not care at all, you know, at the same time. So like, I'm going to plan within an inch of his life and do all this stuff, but I'm going to be able to let it go too. And then of course that's how life is too. You're throwing curveballs all the time, right? So you got to be able to roll with it. And I had some very sad person. I mean, we were joking about how to make a death light. But I, you know, my father actually passed away in a weird accident. And so it was very hard for me to write. It's probably not an accident that I then created this mystery, but I was there. So I suffered some sort of PTSD from it, also I just like my unconscious wouldn't let me write some things. Sometimes I would just like try to sit down and I would squeeze out like a sentence on one day. So there were some strangely dark times while I'm creating this really, really happy, you know, well, I mean, happy murder book. I don't know how murder can be fun, but it is generally a fun book. So I think that's part of the reason I'm so proud of the book is just also just sort of represents a little triumph over some sadness in my life too.
Well, first off, thank you for sharing that because that's something that's hard to share. And I respect you for sharing it. You, Second, to be able to take something like an experience like that and sort of process it through writing in a way that is something that causes other readers. I mean, the way you're talking about these life experiences, right? The way that we are able to process things and overcome, that's a cliche word, but
did it. Yeah. No, I know what you're saying.
The way that you do it ends up giving you the tools to be able to empathize with others or be able to lead others through something traumatic.
Well, and it's weird because I don't think you would ever read the book and think that. I don't think I thought that at all when I'm reading it, but I'm like, huh, that's kind of funny that I wrote a book about someone dying in a freak accident. But I think the other thing that I start noticing about writing is, yes, okay, it's fun mystery and friendship. But for example, this book is a lot about perfection without giving anything away, but perfectionism gone awry.
The
town parade needs to be perfect. You know, everybody involved in it is just really blinded to all kinds of things that they're dealing with. And that's why they don't see this darkness in their town and the kids can solve the case. But I'm totally wrestling with my own demons about perfectionism through this kind of light middle grade book. So it's funny how almost nothing that anyone writes is without, you know, exposure of their own lives or depth, even if someone might read it and go, hey, fun, you know.
I can believe that. There's no way to escape yourself when you're writing.
We're getting deep. We're getting deep here.
No, but this is the great thing about this is that you're so kind and generous and other people coming on too, to just allow me to just be curious and go this way. But so it's making me think that, I don't know, the psychology of the stuff that you're working out, like, so you're working with seventh graders. Great. And you have this audience then that you're like, hey, I want to write for them. And I'm also hearing from you that you've got this background of liking stories and probably liking stories that move along like this. And there's something about putting it in a first-person perspective that also is appealing to you. All those things, I feel like there's no accidents in writing. Everything is informed by something, as whether we know consciously that it's going on or not, that it's all informed by something. Yeah. But those experiences, that loving to read and then having that come back this way in front of children to cause you to want to write, I think that those sorts of qualities, when people have them, really make good books when it's that attitude. I have heard from other people that they're like, oh, I wrote a book because I didn't like any of the books my kids were reading, and so I thought I would write a book for them.
Oh, right.
And, that doesn't quite serve the right purpose. But the notion of I loved reading, and so when I was working with kids, I wanted to be able to contribute as well. My own story, I think, brings some really interesting things out. And I
do notice, so many kids writers we're all stuck at age 12. We're silly. I mean, it reminds me a lot of my middle school teaching colleagues. When we go to the faculty meeting, you know, and I taught in the high school as well. But the middle school, we were the mischief makers, definitely. We were the silly ones. And I don't know if I was as silly before I taught middle school. And I can't keep track.
Cool, it might have brought it out of you. I can't keep track of my wackiness,
whether I was always silly or not. Recently, I was like, Mom, you know, people think I'm a little weird. They think I'm a little eccentric. I always thought I was pretty normal. And she goes, no, you were always pretty unusual.
But you got to be put in a situation that would bring it out of you.
I guess so.
I think I'm like a loving, wanting people to feel connected kind of person.
Certainly seem that way.
But I think that comes directly from working with young children because they're needy in a different way. And I really, really like them to feel like I care about them and that they have a place at our table. And so maybe we're all sort of just cosmically called to the right jobs for us where we can, again, better understand ourselves.
Yeah, yeah. I certainly became much more patient as a teacher very quickly.
Oh, just cool.
Patient and more of a much more attuned to others, I think.
Yeah, really. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hey, you've got with this, but I didn't know you from Wig in the Window, but I've known you now in the process of Tierra on the Terrace. I think I've known you since before the arcs were ready. I think. Yeah. It's been about that time. So I've been able to see sort of what's gone on so far, and I'll continue to know you beyond this.
I hope so. Because I would say, you might just shut down and be like, no, this was a disaster.
Kristen, you're talking therapy, and listen to how both of us go to, like, I was immediately going to be like, I don't know if you're still going to be talking to me, and you, like, immediately jumped to the exact same emotional response.
We should just start going to couples therapy now.
Hi, my name is Matthew. I know that none of you probably want me here, but I'm here. That's what all of us say going around the circle. No, but you have, you've got a really, really good handle on, from my perspective, on marketing your books, which I think is really great, in particular with Tiara on the Terrace. And I say that from going onto your website and knowing how nice your website looks, how laid out it is. And it's a beautiful site. You've done a good job. It's good. And you're on social media and that's great. But also you've got like, you had that like really cool advanced reader kind of package come out, right?
Yeah, and I had a fun idea and Harper was nice enough to send that out to everyone too. Yeah.
That's But that's rad though. The idea of like putting, okay, listeners, let me have an aside because I need to tell you what we had. So I got in the mail from HarperCollins a package that included the arc of the book and I think probably some bookmarks or something. Yeah. But it had what I really thought was awesome was that letter. I remember the letter, the invitation to the Winter Sun Festival, the piece that felt like, oh my word. This is like a real thing, playing that way. And I think that I also fall subject to, I must still be 12 again, because I get that. And I'm like,
it's fun, you know,
it is fun, Kristen.
And so if you create something, so for the listeners, the Tiara and the Terrace, the Winter Sun Festival takes itself very, very seriously, as does, by the way, the Tournament of Roses. We are very proud of our parade and it can lead to taking yourself way too seriously. So this letter that went out was pretty kind of stodgy letter that was very serious and a bit tongue-in-cheek about, you know, some of the accidents that took place at the tragic last year festival and this year's festival is going to be great, you know, sort of making up for what the story of the Tiara and the Terrace tells. But once you create something, I think as far as I appreciate the marketing compliment, but it's sort of part of it for me is how also having fun with that part because, hey, I get to expand the world a little bit or create a little fun with that. And, you know, I'm marketed to all the time. We all are. So you see what doesn't work and that's buy my book, you know, read my book, you know, it's got to be, you know, come from your own sense of fun about something. So I like to have a lot of fun.
I think this is rad. I mean, it's something that has stuck with me, Kristen, since receiving it. I've read it a ton of times. Is the letter going to be, pardon me, I'm still getting over a cold. Is the letter going to be posted anywhere or do you mind if I read it?
That's
is
a good idea. Oh, no, go ahead.
Do you mind? So listeners, I'm going to read this to you because this is like what has been on my mind. And again, the packet was so beautiful. It was so nice. It drew me into the setting. But here it is. September 27, 2015. Dear Matthew. The countdown has begun for Luna Vista's 126th Winter Sun Festival. The parade floats have been designed, our flower orders are in, and before we know it, our volunteer float decorators will be pouring onto the Ridley Mansion grounds. We can't wait to meet the fine young women auditioning for this year's Royal Court. I'd like to take this opportunity to thank you for your continued support of the festival despite last year's unfortunate incidents. While Luna Vista's root beer float is indeed unsalvageable, I'm sure you agree that its loss is trivial in light of the potential tragedy that 7th graders Sophie Young and Grace Yang prevented. We are deeply indebted to them. As a token of our appreciation, please find enclosed a special gift honoring our town heroes. Given recent happenings in Luna Vista, we suggest you keep the spy notebook and flashlight pen very handy. Also included are instructions for the famous Polybius Square cipher that helped our brave sleuths in their investigations. As you might suspect, the festival leadership will be finalizing necessary personnel changes over the next coming weeks. Despite the challenges we face, I suspect this year's festival will be our best yet. In other words, of our dearly departed president, Jim Steptoe, the winter sun always shines. Raising a glass of Ridley root beer to you. Hope to see you at the beach ball. Sorry, I'm obsessed with this, Kristen. This is like I can't even
I'm inviting you now to come back to the Rose Parade. It's very funny to hear you read that back to me right now, because honestly, the Tournament of Roses, that's exactly what's going on right now. We're December 21st. I was just down at the float barns today. The floats are starting to be built. Everyone is like whipping into action. You see these scooters, and you can't drive through town because they have to tow the floats through the town. So,
really?
You know, traffic gets backed up and there's all these people zipping around in these white scooters. So that's real from the book. And they all wear these white suits. And the headquarters of the tournament is at the Wrigley Mansion of the famous chewing gum magnate. Oh. So in my book, it's a root beer magnate, and his name is Ridley. And they wear brown suits, you know, because of the root beer. And then, of course, we needed a literal root beer float because, you know, you can't miss that pun in a middle grade book. Right?
Me having never read this book, this is the way that I received the arc. It wasn't like some arc ahead of time and then this nice package came. This is the way that I got it. So the first thing I did was read that letter, and then I was like, oh well, now I have to read this book now. It has to start right now. It's just that. It's that kind of invitation to not just write a book. Okay, I'm gonna say two things here. But let me first say the invitation to not just write a book, but to engage in the world of the story. That's something that is so fun, and I'm thankful that you were able to take the time to be able to do that, because I think that it invites us into that world and sets a stage that we want to be a part of, not just relying on us cracking open the book and having the first, I don't know, chapter engage us, but to be able to play even before that. The same way that the cover entices you in. It's like,
it's a great cover.
Yeah. It's like something before the cover though. No, but I mean, it's that. So I guess the part two, what I was going to say is just that notion of, so I've written a book. I wrote a professional book. So just to have the experience of knowing you spend so much time with that content, and you spend even more that this is going to sound harsh, but to not be sick of it, but to still want to do stuff is like, amazing. And you do end up getting that in children's writing. You get that really wonderful thing that then kids see it and love it. I wrote for teachers, so it's a little different.
Energy, but... you know, is well, at least for me to you know, we more than people who write for adults, I think, though I don't write for adults, I don't know. It just seems like I have a lot more interaction with my readership.
You must.
That is so fun. So it gives you that sense of play and fun. I will say it comes at a cost, though, of time.
True.
I was able to do that for this book because I had stopped teaching. So I could play and have fun and sort of have a little more time to dream. But if you're always creating things around the same world or doing that, it's... that energy is not going into a new story or, you know, and fortunately a letter is cheap, but a lot of other things aren't. As we were talking off the record about videos and the like, a lot of the marketing that I've been able to do is through the graciousness and help of friends. And because I'm a teacher, I know people who are all involved in kids things. So like, I was just laughing at myself today because I'm planning the launch party, but I think we will be a few days away from the airing of this and not far from now. And I'm like, wow, I know someone who owns a balloon shop. I know someone who owns an ice cream shop. You know, I know someone who does a photo booth for kids. And, you know, and they're so kind, but you can't ride on the kindness of friends for multiple books. You can do it like once, twice, go through and nag a few favors. So, you know, at a certain point, I won't be able to do as much fun stuff. And it's hard. It's hard for the publishers to have the resources to be kind of, you know, create extra content beyond
Makes
the
sense.
Book. Yeah. But I do have fun. I do have a lot of fun. Otherwise, I wouldn't do it.
Right.
Easy enough to send it out. And you honestly don't know how much of a difference it makes. So it's really got to be fun for you to do. Otherwise.
Yeah. Well, and you, speaking of the fun stuff, you were talking about the friends you were meeting, but you made this amazing book trailer. I mean, it's like so, so good. How you get kids to act. Well, you said you're out in Pasadena, so that's how you get kids to act.
That's how it works, exactly.
But it's so funny. The kids did such a good job of like mocking, is it fair to say, like mocking what a publisher boardroom looks like?
It definitely is.
It's awesome.
I got the idea actually from when I was for The Wig in the Window. There's a little YouTube video of two kids as well who were actually in this video as well, but now they grew up fast because they were, I think, in seventh grade when they did the other one. So they were sort of on the cusp of looking much older. Now they are much older or look much older. So they play the higher ups in the video. But yeah, in that video, they suggested they help me market my book. And just one day I was sitting around and thinking, oh, that would be funny if we saw what it looked like, what it would look like for them to market my book, for kids to market my book. And then I just sort of combined that with what I imagine, you know, a publisher's marketing meeting could be like, which I have no idea. I'm just imagining office, you know, corporate, but hipster corporate kind of. And so you put them in like plaid and in some of the chunky, you know, chunky black glasses and you know, and it was really important to me that it be the boys also, that it be equally boys and girls marketing the book there, because a lot of people hear the word tiara in the title and think, oh, this is just a book for girls, when you've got like secret codes and adventure and and maybe it deals with two girls and their feelings and friendship, but that doesn't mean boys don't have feelings and friendship problems either. So I really, in the video, wanted to do that. And so I had this little idea, and I walked into the bookstore and I was kind of talking to a bookseller friend of mine, and was a film school grad. And he's like, oh, I can do that for you. We can do that. And he gave me this confidence. I was like, oh, we can? And he's like, yeah, it's just four kids around a conference table, no problem. Well, it turned into this pretty massive coordination on our parts, and definitely was much more time than I expected. But we had a blast. We had such a good time. And I am lucky that I live in LA, where these kids, a lot of kids actually want to act and be in movies. So I have some friends' kids who were really excited about it. But the kid in the red plaid, if your listeners watch the video later, he hadn't ever acted in, I think he'd been in a school play. So that was it. And I thought he stole the show at some point. So
nailed it. Yeah. I was very impressed just with, so book trailers are a thing that for the most part are left to the author or the illustrator. I think the publishers, that's the word I'm looking for, don't often have the funding to be able to put together a book trailer, much beyond sort of like animating the book slightly, right?
Yeah.
Zooming in on the cover, Ken Burns style or something, which is fine. It makes sense. What you did and how well it was edited and put together was something that will stand up for a really, really long time. It was really good. I mean, to the point that I've talked to Colby and other friends at Nerdy Book Club and shared that notion of like, you know, we're at a point now where I think it's time we start giving awards for book trailers, because there are people that are doing this sort of thing, like connecting from being in film school or from being animators or something, making really beautiful book trailers that are sort of works of art that elevate the medium and help draw people back to reading. And so that what you did, I think, I hope will connect with a lot of people as well, and will inspire a lot of people to consider going that route too when they're making their book trailers, because it's awesome.
Well, the credit goes to Josh Kroot at Romans, and who also has his own web series as well. So Crute, look him up online and look at his other stuff. He was incredible with the kids on the set, and that trailer
notes.
I helped write it, but that is him. So I can't
all
take
right. it. I'll put a link to his stuff. That's awesome. Yeah. Kristen, we're going to have to take, I know, I don't like this time. This is my like kicking and screaming time. I don't like when it ends, but
you can call and chat anytime.
Well, are you still writing books? Cause you can come back here anytime. I mean,
I
you
hope
can,
so.
You don't have to be writing books. You can just come back and hang out with me.
I've been busy making trailers the last month or whatever, but no, actually I've been writing as well. So
Kristen, we can come back every year around the Rose Parade, and you can just talk to me about all the crazy people watching you've done. I'm fine with that too.
Gosh, yeah. I need like a team of people like this. We could do some very good content around the Rose Parade, I think. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm part of this huge festival. I just heard about it on the radio, And I was like, gosh, that sounds like perfect for the book. And I called them up and they, or I emailed them and they called me up within 5 minutes and they're like, yes, please come join us. So the audiobook narrator and I are doing all these performances around this huge festival. And so I'm all of a sudden scrambling to try to get that together.
Oh my word. You have an audiobook performance. Listen to you. That is awesome.
I know.
Girl, I hope stuff continues to go as well as it does for you.
I know. And let's just cross our fingers. And,
You don't even need to do that. You've got good librarians out here in the world that are going to help get this book into the hands of kids, and it's good stuff. I am thankful that our paths have crossed because I know that they're going to cross again. But before I let you go, let's talk kickball.
Oh, kickball.
All right, buddy. You're in the always sunny place for kickball, so here we go. I'm going to come out and play.
It was always chosen last, too.
Me, too. Well, this will be another one of those therapy sessions, right? All right, I'm assembling an all-star Kidlit Dream Team kickball tournament, and I would love to know, Kristen, what one person alive or past from the Kidlit world you would want on your team and why.
I would want Corey Ann Haydew, who has recently started writing middle grade, has a wonderful one out called Rules for Stealing Stars, because she is sunny and fun and smart and spunky and would be a great cheerleader.
Corey, we're looking at you, buddy. Kristen, thank you so much for coming on again, and especially thank you for sharing Tiara with me. I really like the book, and I'm thankful that not only that I got a chance to read it, but that I got a chance to get to know the person behind it. You're really wonderful, and I'm truly thankful that you're out there writing for our kids.
Oh, well, I'm honored, and I'm glad that it was worth the time, because that's always so important with a book. If you write a book, takes 8 hours to read or whatever it is, you really want it to be worthwhile. So thank you.
It was
wonderful to be here. And keep fighting the good fight. Librarian fight.
It was
books with kids. Well, I deeply appreciate it.
The book was way worth the time, and the fight is always worth the time. So thank you again, Kristen.
All right. Take care.
Let's Get Busy is recorded and produced by me, Matthew Winner, in my library studio in Ellicott City, Maryland, and by All the Wonders, a home for readers to discover new books and to experience the stories they love in wondrous ways. Go beyond the book at allthewonders.com and check out other podcasts from All the Wonders, including the Picture Booking Podcast with Nick Patton and The Best Book Ever This Week. Our theme music is by Blue Ducks. All views and opinions expressed on the show are those of the individuals, myself included, and do not reflect ideas or viewpoints of the publishers of the books referenced. Listeners, if this episode connected with you, I'd love to hear it. Leave a comment on allthewonders.com or rate Let's Get Busy on iTunes or Stitcher through stars or reviews. Sharing the podcast with friends through Facebook, Twitter, word of mouth, or any other means helps reach more listeners, which leads to more content and more amazing guests. And that is a very good thing indeed. Next up on Let's Get Busy, Michelle Schusterman shares the story behind Dead Air, the first book in the Cat Sinclair files. And later in the week, Selena Yoon talks about Be a Friend, her newest picture book. See you then, and thanks for listening. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favourite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.